my name is Sarah Vanderwater, your English navigator for this very special edition of Dear Ken, brought to you in English to celebrate its 250th episode. I'm here with your life advice expert, Ken Honda. Ken, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
Thank you. Dear Ken is actually a weekly Japanese podcast that's been running for about 4 years and recently reached more than 15 million downloads in Japan. So what is Dear Ken really about?
I've started this program because I wanted to answer all the questions from the readers of my books. I give lectures and seminars to 1,000 people at the time. Mm-hmm. And I usually have about 15 to 30 minutes mm-hmm. for Q&A. By the way, that's the most popular part of my lecture.
What's so popular about it?
The way I answer these questions, they get a lot of answers.
I see.
And also insights about their life.
So not just the person asking the question, but the audience as well.
Right. So I try to answer in a way that anybody in the same place, in the same lecture hall,
can relate to it and apply it to in their own lives.
Right.
So,
but I usually have only three or four people at the time. So I've been thinking if there is any way to answer all the questions from the readers.
Right. Okay. And so this is a kind of research for you.
Right. And also at the same time, I can answer all the questions they wish they could ask at the lecture hall.
Right. It's a way to, you know, back up and get people and get a wider audience.
Right. And also what's interesting is that I answered to some of the questions, for example, you know, I have a hard time dating with a guy or, mm-hmm. Or a girl.
That's a little embarrassing to ask in front of everybody.
Right, I know. And then after 2 years, mm-hmm. couple of years, they, at the party, a woman approached me and said, remember Dear Ken, question? I was the one. And mm-hmm. then because of your answer, I had enough courage to ask a guy for the date. And mm-hmm. this guy is my husband. So I'm so happy that I just keep doing this.
It comes back around. How often does that happen to you?
Wherever I go, I often have people approach me mm-hmm. and just say, I listen to this program mm-hmm. and I change my jobs mm-hmm. and I could say, I love you to my dad,
So a lot of different types of success stories.
Right. So I'm very happy with the results.
So what inspired you to do this special edition of Dear Ken in English?
I'm thinking of writing books in English. Mm-hmm. I have done enough in Japanese.
How many books have you written?
I've written over 100 books.
Wow.
In Japanese.
When do you have time to sleep?
That's what everybody asks me, but writing comes very naturally. So I write anywhere. I have like 5 different Apple computer. one in each car, and I have a few places, and I have embarrassingly too many computers.
One for each room of the house.
Right. And then when I open, the computer, mm-hmm. just a few seconds after that, whatever I want to write,
I see.
They keep coming back.
So in the breaks throughout the day, you're pretty much always writing?
Right. So sometimes I feel like I'm writing all day, but I actually am writing in between a lot of chores.
Okay. So we're getting ready to publish in English, so that's really exciting. So this is a kind of research for you, right?
That's true. I just want to hear how English-speaking audience, they feel like about life.
Right.
And I just want to know what their life issues, and I wonder how I can help them.
Right. There's a lot of similarities between Japanese and American culture, surprisingly, and a lot of people don't know about it yet, so I think this is a good cultural bridge.
Right, and also not only in US or Canada, mm-hmm. I've met many people from European countries, Africa, India, China. We all worry about the same things, about our marriages, mm-hmm. our job shifts, about our parents and kids and health. I think 95% are very similar.
We're all the same, right?
Right.
So let's give a brief self-introduction just to get people started. A lot
yes.
of people may not be aware of your history or who you are yet in English. Mm-hmm. So, first of all, as you may have already guessed, I am American from my accent, you may know, but I'm also from Texas, although it doesn't really show in my accent, I mm-hmm. hope. But perhaps living in Japan for over 7 years has taken mm-hmm. away a bit of that accent. You tend to speak more clearly after being here for a while. But can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yes. I grew up in Kobe, Japan, and then I I had a dream one day that I'd like to travel the world and make so many friends in the world and achieve world peace. So that was my dream when I was 13.
Right.
And, yeah, and my father was a very successful accountant, and he taught me everything about money. So he's given me all the great lessons
about great money. Education.
Right. He was a business owner, so he taught me about how to run and also own a business.
Right. From a young age, you've been taught just, you know, in your upbringing.
Right. And I started my business when I was 21.
That's pretty young to start your own business. I don't think a lot of people have that opportunity.
Yeah. So in Japan, I'm a very unique individual because I never worked for anybody in my entire life. And I was very successful throughout my 20s. Mm-hmm. And I retired at the age 29 when my wife and I found out that she was pregnant.
Right. So you were able to raise your daughter at home together?
Right, for 4 years. My hero is John Lennon.
Uh-huh.
And I knew John Lennon did the same thing.
I see.
One day, that was my biggest dream in my 20s. One day when I become successful in business, I'd retire for my baby.
I see.
Which I did.
Was that a difficult transition?
A lot of people thought that's the time you start working harder, you know. And also, that's what a lot of guys get very serious when they find out that their wives are pregnant.
It's a new stage in life.
Right. So we took a different route. But during the semi-retirement for 4 years, I was thinking about what I would do after raising a child because, you know, I couldn't be dad forever. You know, so my my career as a dad would soon end.
Well, you need some external other source of income, right?
Right. Yeah, well, financially I was okay, but I'd be kicked out of my daughter's life.
By the age of, 15 or 16?
Right, or like even 10. And then I want to be somebody that she'd respect me after she grows up. So I wanted to do something for the world, not just for myself, or just business. And then one day when I was taking a walk in the park, I had this vision of writing books. And at the time, I was not educated in this literature or whatever.
So you'd never written any books before then?
Or anything, because I was a law major student, and I was doing accounting business. So writing was not in my...
Really your thing.
Right. But this image kept haunting me for a couple of years. And then I just made up my mind, maybe I'll just write something.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was so surprised that I could write.
Right.
And then I written 26 pages of a booklet. That's how I sort of started my career.
That's the beginning of the career of Ken Honda, the author.
Right. And then after giving away my booklets to a lot of people, I said in the end of my booklet, I said, I'll give a copy to you if you're interested.
To anyone who wants it.
Right. And then after I had given about 100,000 copies, a publisher called me and they're interested in publishing.
Hmm. That's a really good opportunity. I mean, how did they even get your information?
Because I think obviously the editor's friend.
Someone introduced them.
Right, gave him a copy. But at the offer, I turned them away. I turned them down because I thought I never write.
You
I could
never
thought finish.
That you would become,
finish a full book.
It's a big challenge, and if you've never done it before, it's hard to see how it would be done in the first place.
Right, like 26 pages were all I got.
And that took a couple of years.
Right, and then I said no, you know, I'm not an author. So, but he said, okay, but why don't you give it a try? You have a lot of time. And that was true. And so I just sat down and just relaxed. Mm-hmm. And then this flow of energy just kept me writing.
Mm-hmm.
And then within a week or so, I finished the first book.
Wow.
Right.
That's actually a pretty short amount of time. You must have really found your passion.
Right. It was not even a passion. It was just, you know, I had a hard time sleeping. So until this thing comes out of my system, you know, I couldn't do anything.
You had to get it out.
Right. So, and then what was interesting is that by the time I finished my first book, mm-hmm. I had the second book and the third book already in my head.
I see.
Yeah, so I was, since then, I've been pretty busy man.
So more than 100 books later, and right. Still publishing about once a month, is that right?
Right, it's about that. Wow. Yeah, it's book industry is in Japan a little bit different from mm-hmm. North America mm-hmm. and Europe, but mm-hmm. still fairly amount of books per year.
Wow. All right. Well, I think I'd like to thank all of our Japanese and English listeners for tuning in. We hope you enjoy this episode of Ken Honda's advice column, Dear Ken, in English. That brings us to Ken's life advice. In this segment, Ken uses his unique style to answer listener questions. Our first question comes from Anna in California. She says, I love my job, but I work late a lot, and I often work on the weekends too. When I do take some time off, I feel too exhausted to really enjoy it. I don't really want to work less, but how can I work smarter?
Okay, thank you, Anna. I'm just a little surprised that this is exactly the same question that I get from Japanese audience.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because we have this impression that American people, you know, don't work
hard. A little bit lazy.
Right, and not lazy, but they know how to enjoy and how to work.
A lot of people, you know, go home right at 5 o'clock.
Right.
Is that the same in Japan?
I think Japanese people tend to work later and harder. So I think a lot of people have this same issue.
I see.
Right. And also, if you're very enthusiastic about work, I think you tend to work harder.
Yeah, if you love your job, you know, you want to work more, but you also need to take some time off, I think.
Right. And also, what's important is that a lot of people are so consumed by work. I often ask my audience, mm-hmm. who owns your life? Mm. And then a lot of people find it so surprising that their life is actually owned by your company.
I see.
Right. So even if you work individually, or like a freelance, if you work too hard, mm-hmm. your owner is not you.
Right. It's your work.
Right. And then so where is this part? Where is this ownership? You know, if you really want to own your own life, mm-hmm. you have to really question who owns who.
Right.
Yeah.
So when you realize that, you know, work controls your life or that your company controls you and owns you, basically, how can you break out of that?
So you have to remember you own your own life and you're the one who can lease out whatever the hours, but still you have the ownership.
So it's a choice.
Right. But if you just work harder than you want, you feel powerless, and then you almost feel like you've given away your ownership to the company.
I think a lot of people,
company.
Yeah, you would feel a little bit guilty if you worked less in that situation.
Right, and also it goes very similar ways with partnership too. If you're too dependent on your partner, you give away your partner ownership.
Ownership of yourself.
Yeah, to your partner. Like, so you often ask your husband or wife or your kids, are you having fun?
Right.
Or do you enjoy yourself? And then you
feel
forget.
It's your responsibility.
Right, and you forget about your own responsibility. So you have to really remember that you own your own life. And
so
then,
it's about balance?
Right, and you can allocate your time.
I see.
Yeah, so as far as you remember you own your life, I guess you know how to balance it.
I see. So that's the same advice you'd give to your Japanese listeners?
Exactly.
I see. Well, thank you very much, Anna.
Thank you, Anna.
Our second question is from Jason in Tokyo. He says, I love making friends in a foreign country, but I often feel like a lot of people are just using me to learn English, and the only thing they actually like about me is that I speak English. So how can I make real friends abroad?
It's interesting, and it goes the same way, because when you make friends, I think there's some kind of profit, you know, an unseen emotional profit. So for Jason, he sees more English part, right?
Right.
But we tend to seek our friendship based on what kind of feeling we can get. Like, do you want to have fun with your friends? Or you can improve yourself.
It feels a little manipulative in a way to think about it like that.
Right. So in a sense, we manipulate each other. And we try to gain something, either free English lessons or a feeling of being,
you know, having fun and relaxing and doing some activity together.
In any partnership, you have to really know what you're giving and what you're getting.
I see.
If you feel that you're giving too much and not getting anything back, you feel like you're being manipulated.
That's true. You feel like you're being used.
Right. Or just take a look at from other perspective. Mm-hmm. If you don't give much, mm-hmm. and if you get a lot, mm-hmm. He or she, your friend, mm-hmm. would feel that you're just taking advantage of him or her.
I see.
But what's interesting is that even if you are very careful and try to balance it, but there's no way that we even out.
There's no way. It's never going to be even.
Right. Because if I buy your lunch, mm-hmm. and your
I'm
friend
gonna
buy...
I'm going to feel like I owe you.
Right. And then you buy back your dinner. Mm-hmm. But dinner is expensive, you mm-hmm. know.
So you may owe me for next time.
Right. So who owes who?
Right.
So a real good friendship mm-hmm. is in just not out of balance.
Oh, it is out of balance.
Right.
Kind of going back and forth.
Right. And then you try to make it up mm-hmm. the next time, mm-hmm. and then your friend does the same thing.
I see.
So it has to be mutual.
So what can people like Jason do who are experiencing friendship in another country?
Right.
And, you know, want to give back something to people who just want English from him, but you don't really know what to give.
Yeah, because it's more of his feeling, I think, that mm-hmm. If he can find his friendship in these lessons, mm-hmm. He doesn't feel manipulated. Because just ask Jason if he gives a lesson mm-hmm. to a very, very attractive girl or a guy, you know, mm-hmm. he would feel so excited, you know.
And make it a little bit, you know, more worth his time.
Right. So it's more of a feeling.
I see. It's all about how you approach it. And yeah. that's a choice, right?
Right. So just I want him to explore what kinds of area he can just give right. and receive.
Do you think true friendship across cultures like this is possible when both people don't speak the language quite perfectly?
Of course, if you find somebody who likes to give mm-hmm. and receive at the same time, mm-hmm. I think Jason will make many friends.
I think for some people, receiving is a little bit easier, but is that the same in Japan?
I think it's very much the same everywhere. Okay. Some people try to take advantage of you, mm-hmm. and some people give it too much and mm-hmm. then regret later. Mm. So just enjoy your friendship.
I see. That's the key to friendship across cultures. Just enjoy it and have fun with each other.
Right. And don't count any numbers.
Okay. Don't keep score.
Don't keep score. That's exactly. Yes.
That's exactly right.
Right.
That's it for today's edition of Ken's Life Advice. Thank you very much, Ken.
Thank you. Everyone and everything that shows up in our life is a reflection of something that is happening inside of us. Alan Cohen.
Ken Honda's Life Advice Column. Dear Ken. Thank you for listening to this special English edition of Ken's Life Advice Column, Dear Ken, in celebration of our 250th episode. We hope you enjoyed it. So, Ken, how did it feel to record Dear Ken in English for the first time?
I was very nervous and I was very excited at the same time. Mm. And I really enjoyed it, so I look forward to doing more with you.
Great. Do you feel like your English ability has improved over the last year or so?
Yeah, thanks to you and a lot of people.
You must have some really good English teachers.
Right. And then I feel very appreciative that I can do this in English.
Well, it was really a great pleasure to do this with you. Thank you, Ken.
Thank you so much, Sarah, and everybody for tuning in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We look forward to hearing your questions and comments about today's show. We'd also like to take this opportunity to remind you that once a month, 5 lucky listeners are selected to receive one of Ken's lucky ballpoint pens as a gift. We're also accepting applications to share your life advice questions with Ken live via Skype to be aired on one of our future episodes. So don't miss out on your chance to chat directly with Ken himself. Please check out the Ken Honda homepage for more information. You can find it at kenhonda.tokyo. That's kenhonda.tokyo. No space, no dots. So that's it for this week's episode. Thank you very much, Ken. See you next time. This program is brought to you by IUA Office. It is produced by Ryohei Hayakawa at Kiktas, directed by Masanori Nagumo, and narrated by Sarah Vanderwater.